This is the Busted Open Podcast. You can listen to the full show 7 days a week from 9 a.m. to noon Eastern on SiriusXM Fight Nation Channel 156.
Welcome in to the Sunday edition of the Busted Open Podcast. Along with Justin Labar, I'm Jonathan Hood. And Justin, Cody Rhodes with the slap heard around the world on The Rock.
Oh, the atmosphere building up to that was electric.
Also, Paul Heyman goes into the WWE Hall of Fame. And we talked about manager Mount Rushmore's.
Great conversation here. And where does he rank? And the longevity, just incredible for the wise man.
Also, the match of the week, Busted Open match of the week. Judge Susumu put on the robe, and we had a judgment.
WWE, NXT, AEW, TNA, so much good stuff to pick from.
So much more. Did you say NWA? Enjoy the Sunday edition of the Busted Open Podcast. We start off first by talking about the phrase, or the quote, "We accept." We accept. That's the big marquee line that was put out there by Seth Rollins and Cody Rhodes as we have a tag team match now at WrestleMania. Cody Rhodes and Seth Rollins against The Rock and Roman Reigns. You know what? What I really love, Justin, is the hype for this match has been straight cinema. The build and how incredible this has been for all of us wrestling fans. It just feels personal. And it feels like it's built to last. I know that we have to wait almost another month now for WrestleMania, but it doesn't feel like the wheels are slowing down. It feels like it's a nice pace week after week on Raw and SmackDown and on social media to get to where we are right now.
Yeah, you know, I've been vocal about my, you know, how I prefer, and I think it makes more sense to be Rock versus Cody. I've gone over that. Still feel that way, but all of that said, I feel better than I ever have about this tag match in this moment, and that has strictly to do with what we got Friday on SmackDown with the entire presentation, from the showing them arriving, each participant arriving and having security dispatched to each of them. The atmosphere alone for what we got Friday makes me, and then the execution makes me feel better than I felt this entire time about, oh, it's going to be this tag match in night one.
You know what you love is, and we haven't talked about this as a show yet, but when you have the wrestlers walking through the parking lot or going through the back and on their way to the locker room, it feels like all the other sports that we watch, the walkthrough for the NBA guys, because they have to show exactly what they're wearing, right? Who are you wearing today? It's almost like a red carpet thing when the NBA guys go through there. The UFC guys, when they come with their bag and they're on their way to the locker room, and you have the time right there in the right-hand corner of exactly, you know, from their kayfabe standpoint, what time they came in, knowing that they've been in the building since 1 o'clock for an 8 o'clock show or whatever, right? But just the idea that it just feels sporty that way. Just a little addition, just a little wrinkle of saying, hell, those guys came to the building. Okay, what were they wearing coming to the building? Okay, what's their mentality and their attitude going to the building? Just little things like that. That's just kernels of storytelling that you tell from week to week. It's pretty cool.
Well, it has a sport feel to it, to everything you just referenced. It also has, back to the word you use, it has a cinema thing. It's got a cinema feel to it. Like, you know, when you watch a good movie, especially if you're watching some kind of drama or action, you know that there's going to be a collision that's going to lead to major conflict, physical or otherwise. When you see all the players, and as they're all starting to arrive to the same location, it's like you get, I was like, all right, check. Check. You're checking off who's there. Who's, you know, it gives you that feel again, that cinematic atmosphere of things are going to go down tonight. Like look at the big deal we're making and watching each of these participants arrive. So, yeah, I mean, it's you're right. It's a little thing. It's little things that all add up that go a long way. And then look, you can do all those little things, but you got to execute. I was a little nervous, wondering. You know, last week we noted how they put The Rock and the Bloodline stuff up top on SmackDown, so you had as much time as you needed. Take the whole damn hour one. It's going to take that. I think they took 40 minutes. This time they decided to put in the main event. So I was like, in that main event spot. So I'm like, all right, everybody's, you know, we can't veer off. We can't let the crowd take over. We gotta stick to the script, and we got to get out by 10 Eastern. So I was really curious, but I thought, again, all things considered, they executed.
Well, you always are very concerned when it comes to The Rock in that situation, because The Rock thinks that he should be out there for 20, 25 minutes. This is why in the Attitude Era and Hollywood Rock and all that, Nope, you put The Rock at the top of the hour. That way, if he goes into the next quarter hour, we're going to have to trash some matches or shorten some matches on the back end, but let The Rock talk. It's always, I'm sure, the people in the back in WWE are like, please, Rock, please, just shorten this up, please. Because he'll just keep talking because he's feeling it. That's the one thing about The Rock, and you get to go with Roman Reigns in there as well. They feel it, man. They're just like, you know what? They're going to listen to the crowd. They'll add on. They'll subtract. It's kind of like a wrestling match in that regard, right? The old schoolers just like, all right, this is what I need to do to get the crowd going. The crowd's already hot. I don't have to do as much. Same thing with the promo situation with The Rock and Roman Reigns, especially The Rock. I saw like on Twitter the cameraman just telling him to please wrap it up, wrap it up. You've got to do this slap. Do it now. Let's not get a Shawn Michaels, Bret Hart situation where you're waiting for that kick while Shawn's in the wheelchair or whatever. Or whatever happened there. That was just weird. But I'm glad that they were able to get it all in. I saw the slap. Some missed it. I saw it.
Yeah, I saw it. Yeah, I mean, WWE is going to be, once Raw moves to Netflix, just have The Rock appear on Netflix. Then you don't have to worry about any overrun. You can just let him, you know, it's just, you can go for as long as you want. But yeah, as I'm watching my clock and I'm watching the seconds tick up to 10, same thing. I'm like, oh, don't. Like, look, Sting got his speech cut off. Let's not have more cutoffs this week. Let's make sure we get what we need to get here inside of this program.
Yeah, I love what I saw there. As you're listening to Jonathan and Justin on the Sunday edition of Busted Open, as we're talking about the Bloodline and Cody Rhodes and Seth Rollins, the fallout from SmackDown that took place on Fox. There's four things that I look at for me as a fan, Justin. For me as a fan. Okay. Here's what all I want from wrestling. I'm not asking for much as a fan. Here's four things that I want as a wrestling fan.
Should I write this down? You got four things.
Well, I mean, just these are just my personal, you know, opinions on how I look at the business. All I need is something simple. I just need storytelling. I just need anticipation. I need action in the ring, and I need to know what's next. It's very simple, right? I don't ask for much as a wrestling fan. The storytelling, the anticipation, the action, and what's next. And when you take a look at all four of these characters, with Cody Rhodes, with Roman, with Seth, and The Rock, just think, understand, we know what Cody's in there for. Cody's in there because he wants to finish his story. He wants to be the ultimate at the top of the WWE as the champion. For Roman Reigns, he wants to continue his legacy, and he's a very worried champion. He's very paranoid. Even with his tag team partner, WrestleMania, The Rock, he's still looking over his shoulder. He's still not sure, even though he is the guy in WWE, even though that he is the everyone wants to be able to climb up the ladder to be at his spot. He's still worried as heavyweight champion. For Seth Rollins, he's looking for respect. He's looking for respect. He says he's going to be the shield for Cody Rhodes, but yet he's looking for his own respect and saying that he's medically clear and he wants to prove that he belongs in this foursome. And of course, there's The Rock from TKO, who always has the goosebumps, as he's always tapping his forearm because he's trying to keep the goosebumps down. There it is, The Rock, back again, now flexing his muscle, so to speak, of saying, hey, I'm a TKO guy, and I can be able to change this match and all that. So almost an authority figure and wrestler and movie star all in the same match. This breakdown is just amazing. These four have four different stories, and it's all going to culminate into a match at WrestleMania.
Yeah, I mean, you know, God, they should be paying you, Jay Hood, the way you sell it, just like that. You know, it's you're right. You got four different paths, four different agendas, four different egos, and that's kind of going back to what I said a moment ago, is that seeing all of that in the ring this past Friday, on verbal display and then briefly physical. Like I said, I feel more encouraged than I ever have, and I hope that by the time we get to a week inside of Mania, you can't shut me up about this match. I hope that I'm giddy with Gander at seeing this damn match happen. I the biggest thing to me out of all of that, out of all of the story elements you just laid out there and noting the situation of all four, thank goodness that the script called for Cody to slap The Rock, because given all that's been said, I was saying to myself this entire SmackDown as we're building to this, I'm like, all right, we, you know, pretty sure the match is going to get accepted. That's a no-brainer. What else? Cody has got to get physical, at least, or has to attempt. And if it takes all 50 of these security guards to try to stop him, whatever. But he has got to attempt, because otherwise, all that's been said If he doesn't, you're making your white meat baby face look like a punk. And so thank God he got that slap in. And now with the way that we're pacing the Jay Hood, we still have, just under a month to go. Rock's talking personal about how he's the boss and he's talking about how I'll make your title go away. We'll get back to that. What the hell does that mean? I'll make your title go away. I'm on the board. I'm the boss. So, we're already flexing personal power there. There's a lot more room to get personal if need be. Cody's got a wife who's in the public eye and who's in the business or has been in the business. You could bring her in, whether it's on social or whether it's on the Raw or SmackDown. Rock's got a daughter at NXT. If Cody needed to have, I'm just saying this. There's players right there. If we need to continue to get personal, to have that personal element as red hot as possible, because as we talked about that, when it's personal, or at least when there's the illusion of it's personal, it always makes money.
The four things I mentioned about storytelling and action and anticipation and what's next, it's all there in this tag team match. It should be there for all matches, but in particular, it's there for this particular match because of the direction all four are going in. There's just a lot going there, and it's still intrigue with all of this because we know that the match is set. I'm just interested to find out if there's some fire from Seth Rollins. We've got fire from Cody with that slap, and let's hone in on what you just said there just for a second. So it's one thing, as you well know, to be a babyface, but you don't want to be a dumbass as a babyface, a gullible babyface. I've seen that before. The gullible babyfaces I grew up with would hold a heel into the corner, hold up his fist, and ask the audience, should I punch him? Should I punch him? Tag team match where there's baby faces against the heels, and then there's a baby face that's on the apron stomping his foot to try to get the crowd going, because I can't do it myself. I know I'm going to get paid if I win, but that's not enough motivation. I need the crowd, because I gotta stomp my foot on the apron to get the crowd going, so that way I can get myself going, right? Those are those baby faces I grew up with. for Cody Rhodes, here's a guy here that, again, will cry at the moment. You mentioned his dad. He gets very emotional. He's talked about how emotional that he can get, but yet the emotion had bubbled up to the surface for him to slap the Rock. And that's exactly what I think many Cody fans, Cody crybabies, was looking for, to fire back at the Rock. And that was great.
Yeah, I mean, in moments like this, we have to think about what would Dave LaGreca want?
Yes.
What would the leader of the Cody Crybabies want? He wants to feel empowered. He wants to feel the anger. He wants to feel Cody's hand slap the face of that millionaire snob who's forgotten the business and forgotten what made him, has forgotten about what it means to be a fan of a red hot babyface. That's what would Dave LaGreca want? And that's what I feel in that moment LaGreca would have wanted. He would have wanted to slap the Rock right across the face. I mean, Dave, even he was posting a still frame of the Rock and his face looking all jiggly just after he felt the impact of that Cody hand.
Ah, nothing like a nice jiggly face. There you go. The jiggly face of the Rock. That should be a wristband, by the way. What would Dave LaGreca do? The acronym or the initials?
What would Dave LaGreca do? Spend a week in your life. Here's a social experiment. This is some shit George Carlin would have came up with. Mm-hmm. Spend a week in your life with a pad and pen. Walk around your daily life. And every time you come to a crossroads, I don't care if it's left or right, sugar or cream, mm-hmm, red or yellow, whatever you come to, write it down and just go, what would Dave LaGreca do? And you're gonna find there's some questions at some crossroads. It's trivial. It doesn't matter what you think LaGreca would do. Then you're gonna come to some other ones. Maybe pay this bill, go over here, pay for that. Like, just start asking yourself, what would Dave LaGreca do?
When you had Cody Rhodes and Seth Rollins and The Rock and Roman Reigns in the ring together, Justin, just combustible elements, and you got a little firing up from Seth Rollins. Here's his set of balls coming up there and telling The Rock and confronting him. I just think all of it has just been fantastic, as I mentioned, cinema from these four leading into WrestleMania.
Absolutely, and you mentioned about Seth, and we did not hear it in that clip, but earlier in the promo, the fans hung over from what they heard on Monday, which was Seth trying to get Diarrhea Dwayne over, and I guess it's over because it carried 4 days later, and they started chanting it, and as I watch and hear what was going on Friday. Jay Hood, I mean, there was kind of three things that were reinforced to me about the different participants. One, Seth belongs. There, the fans are not viewing him as you're not in this league, you're not in context. And I think the fact that they were willing to the way they reacted to what Seth said and the way they were again not unprompted started to do that catchphrase. I told me, all right, they look at Seth that he belongs here. They're buying it. Reinforce that Cody is who they think he is. It's not just a case of, oh, well, he's cheered in the South and old, in towns and territories his dad was popular in. Oh, he's popular in the East. No, I mean, every town, the majority of every town is cheering him, even when he is standing face to face with The Rock. The people are playing along in Cody. So that reinforced that. And the third thing I reinforced, and this might be me choosing violence. Old Rocky don't look so comfortable as a heel at times. There's times, and granted, he was going into this in January thinking he was going to be same old lovable, funny, positive catchphrase Rock, and we called the audible, and now he's pitted on the heel side at least for now. I don't know if it's him, having to reuse walking clown emoji several times at Seth, or if it's just. He's got to share the mic with three other guys, and that's not always been the situation for him. I don't know, but there's times when I watch this and I'm like, I'm enjoying booing The Rock at this moment, and it seems like the fans are, but I don't know if he feels as comfortable in the role. Social media, he feels more comfortable. When he's cutting 21-minute videos on Cody, Seth, and La Greca, he seems a lot more comfortable. But sometimes live in the ring on TV, I don't know. It feels like it's still an adjustment for him.
I think so too. I think it's a little bit of adjustment for him as well. And so I think that if we go back to the 90s and even in the early 2000s, when The Rock would say something cutting to someone, it would come across as a heel, but the fans would cheer it based on the opponent that he'd face. Like
Correct.
the stuff that he would say is just like is stuff a heel would say, especially in the Attitude Era. When you're going after people and going after women and the way that he did verbally, that's stuff that would be something that the heels would say. Austin was the same way. He would say things that heels would say, but again, he got cheered because of the type of era that the WWE was in at the time. And now it comes across, especially when there's Cody and Seth Rollins, two baby faces that people love on one side. When The Rock has those same cutting lines, well, they land, but only as a heel. Same thing with Roman Reigns, the same thing too. Roman Reigns and the Bloodline, they're cool heels. That's what they are. But again, and people are into what they said when Roman says acknowledge me, so it's like that's kind of a heel line, but people are into it. They're still throwing the ones up. They still are. So I think that The Rock, I think at times, like, hey man, that's a funny line. Yeah, but you said it against Cody Rhodes, so I'm not down with that. And so that's the adjustment I think that he's making. So I think you're right about that.
Yeah, it just it dawned on me really when we were watching that on Friday. I was like, man, I just don't feel like and the right and that was the it took a while till The Rock even opened his mouth. There was a whole lot of entrance and a whole lot of visuals and Cody and Seth coming out of the crowd. So it was a while until The Rock really even spoke. And but I just remember feeling like this doesn't feel like he's necessarily in his full comfort zone. I don't like I said I think he's doing his job. I think he's I'm still booing him. But it's. I don't know. It was just a feel of a thing. But I think you hit the I think you hit it. You're right. He could make fun of Triple H's nose
Yes.
back in 1998, and normally again that would be just such a heel thing if you're making fun of somebody's appearance. But it was just getting huge laughters. I mean, take your I don't want any of you that poontang pie. Like I mean things that would just be so degrading. But
Yeah.
you're right. In the context, it was like this is good guy speak. But we're now it's a little bit different place today.
Yeah, I mean, you're sitting in the ring with a guitar and you're just running down Vicky Guerrero. I mean, yeah, this is the stuff that Rock used to do, right? Singing a song about Ricky Guerrero, and just, but these are things that a heel would do. But again, it went over because it's The Rock.
The number one pro wrestling show on the planet, Busted Open, is available 7 days a week by subscribing and downloading the Busted Open podcast. This is Dave LaGreca. Join me alongside two WWE Hall of Famers, Mark Henry and Bully Ray, the hardcore legend, Tommy Dreamer, plus Thunder Rosa and Mickey James, all week long as we break down everything going on in and out of the ring. Listen to Busted Open right now on the SXM app or wherever you get your podcasts.
So my Mount Rushmore for managers over the years, just on the bar, has never wavered. It's been the same forever. It's Bobby Heenan, Jim Cornette, Jimmy, and Gary Hart. That's always been my four. When anyone asks me, hey, who's your Mount Rushmore of wrestling managers, I give the four. I don't really have to give the reason why. I think it's self-explanatory that Bobby Heenan, for me, is the best ever. A guy that was so good and actually a pretty good worker, too. That guy could have been heavyweight champion in some territory if he wanted to, because he could work as a heel, but always great as a commentator, you know, always great as a manager, so great. Jim Cornette manages my favorite tag team, the Midnight Express, over the years. And I thought that Jim did more than just manage. He was managing the talent, doing stuff behind the scenes, ran his own territory. I always thought that Jim was great as a manager and one of the faces of the business that we love. Jimmy and Gary Hart. Jimmy Hart was a manager in Memphis and came to WWE and managed so many different people and was, again, more than just an on-screen manager, was taking care of guys, you know, their travel and everything else. So I think that mattered. And Gary Hart is just a favorite of mine over the years. Again, a great booker in Dallas, in the state of Texas over the years. Booker in WCW, but also a great manager. Brought Kabuki over from Japan. Just wild and just so different. But you know, Justin, I'm going to tell you something. It's very difficult for me not to put Paul Heyman on that list now that he's made it to the Hall of Fame. And by the way, I saw Heyman at the beginning of his career, at least one of the starts of his career, in the AWA. He worked for Vern Gagne in the AWA, and this is when ESPN had AWA wrestling on every day. You come home from school, and it would be on at 3 o'clock, and boy, how much time do you have when you're on 5 days a week on ESPN? Imagine, this is the same network now that has, like, the NBA Today Show, and it's got PTI, and of this valuable real estate, Pat McAfee, all this valuable real estate, and somehow, some way, in the 80s, you could just watch AWA wrestling at 3 o'clock Central Time when I came home from school. And Heyman was there. And Heyman did a great job as a manager. I watched him all the way through his career, you know, in the NWA with WCW, going to the WWE. Of course, the owner of ECW, or, you know, the guy that was running ECW from 93 to 2001. We know his career. So I saw him at an early age with hair. and the guy was fantastic because he was something different that we've never seen before in wrestling at that time. In the 80s, he was the psycho yuppie. That was actually a phrase back then. So I appreciated him because he was so unique.
Psycho yuppie.
That was his name, like the psycho yuppie Paulie Dangerously. Or in Memphis, Paul Dangerly. Here he comes. He is Paul Dangerly. Dangerly.
Lance
Russell called him Dangerly.
Dangerly. Uh-huh. You know, my Mount Rushmore, I was pretty closer with you. I swap out Gary Hart for Paul Heyman. And that's only because for me personally and just general, you know, out of all of them, out of the five of these names we're talking about, Gary Hart had the least national exposure.
That's correct.
And so he was just more of a territory guy, not to diminish. And he's actually, there's a book of his floating out there around it. Suppose it's a very hard book to get. It's a book that I've been told I need to read, need to track it down. So no disrespect to Gary Hart, but I would have to put Paul Heyman on there.
By the way, your partner has it if you like to borrow it.
Oh, I'll give you a mailing address. I'll make my way out to Chicago. I'll go out to the bookstore of Jay Hood. Uh-huh. I put Heyman right there. You're right with Jimmy Hart. You said it all about Jimmy Hart. Jim Cornette, you know, I know to some people in today's age of the podcast world, not the most popular person, but regardless of what you think about his opinions of today in the business and whatever, you cannot deny his contributions and legacy as a manager and promoter in pro wrestling. And then Bobby Heenan, I absolutely agree. You're right. I mean, Bobby, they could have put the title on an AWA and just let the good guys chase him around, and it would have been all fine. What an elite. What an elite class it is of performers in the roles, and all of them doubling up basically as, you know, not just managers but promoters, or, you know, essentially real life managerial work for their clients and their fellow performers. Paul just has a different level to him. Mm-hmm. He's got an extra gear. And, you know, part of it's because he's still doing it. You know, his career has expanded. So, you know, he's doing it in 2024, where we have social media, where the business is more mainstream than it's ever been. And so that plays into things for him, you know, and plays into exposure and plays into what he can say and what he can do, what buttons he can push. I mean, yeah, the Attitude Era was great. But the Attitude Era was still, you know, crotch chops and suck it and beer and middle fingers. It was still a niche product, and it was not a family product, and it was not, you know, it was a huge brand. WWE is a huge brand, but it was not mainstream. Now this is mainstream. WWE has entered into the mainstream more than ever, and it's bigger than ever. And I think Paul Heyman, he has a different level. And out of all those guys, he's the most probably appropriate to be able to seize that and to realize where WWE in the business is today. And to capitalize the way that only he can. I mean, I never would have thought that after seeing him manage who we've seen him manage, most notably Brock Lesnar, I never would have thought I could see a more appropriate on-screen pairing for him. But he and Roman Reigns has just I can't now see one without the other. The wise man and tribal chief just go together.
I would agree with you there. When you think about Heyman and Lesnar together. And not just the most recent time seeing them together. I'm talking about from the beginning, where you saw a very young Brock Lesnar with Paul Heyman with his Yankee cap on,
and those the ponytail,
and the ponytail, and those guys going down to the ring, and they just were a formidable duo, those two, because of the brains and the savvy of Heyman, and then just this young upstart Lesnar, and he gets into the business, and when you think about The Undertaker against Lesnar, you think about the look on Paul Heyman's face. We talk about cinema all the time in the show, right? That was just drama, just to see Lesnar beat The Undertaker and the look on Heyman's face. Even he's shocked. Like, you beat The Undertaker. I believe in you the most, and I can't believe that you beat The Undertaker in New Orleans, and that's exactly what happened. And I just think that you are completely right, because that's why I started the segment about Heyman talking about my Mount Rushmore. Because you hate to knock somebody off that you've believed in for a long time. But with Playboy Gary Hart, Chicago's own, love that guy, love that character, always evil, always an evil man. And in the territories, man, when Gary Hart brought in someone, and usually it was someone from overseas, quote-unquote, kayfabe, with Abdul the Butcher and Kabuki and all these guys, right? It was just amazing to watch Gary in the ring. But it's hard for me to have a Mount Rushmore of managers and not put Paul Heyman on that list. I mean, from the beginning to where he is right now, as an influencer, as someone that was an influencing talent, someone that was great as a commentator, I thought, someone who ran his own business. And again, you know, Bully Ray and Tommy Dreamer could tell you chapter and verse, day-to-day operations with ECW and how they were trying to stay afloat and trying to be a company that people can believe in from a financial standpoint, from an in-ring standpoint. I mean, I could set all that to the side. I just take a look at the body of work of Heyman and say, no matter how dishonest that he might have been with people, based on what people say, the bottom line is that he's an all-time great. And I know that he wouldn't want to hear that, because he always wants to push a talent out there. He's a guy here. I think sometimes watching interviews, he's kind of shy in some ways, right? He's just kind of like, yeah, I know that I have had some influence in the business, but he pushes his wrestlers out there. It's the Lesnars, and it's the CM Punks, and it's the Dudleys, and everybody from ECW. He pushes those guys out there before he pushes himself out there. And now, at WrestleMania, Justin, now he'll get his flowers, and rightfully so, in front of everybody.
Well, he's going to get his flowers, but that's what makes, again, the attraction so intriguing of the Hall of Fame and the speech, because you're right. Is he going to actually, you know, pull the curtain back and talk about his career and what have you? Or is he going to be modest? Is he going to be, you know, because I mean, he's still in the middle of his career. It's not like he's done. It's not like this is a sit down DVD biography. DVD. Listen to me, old man. Pop that VHS in there, will you? It's not like this is a Netflix special documentary where he's sitting down talking about the years that were and looking back at what he used to do. He's still the next night, or he's involved in the next two nights of Mania. You know, he's going to be there at ringside. So it might be like a Joe Pesci situation. I think when Pesci won for Goodfellas, he walked up there and said, you know, thanks very much. And then he walked off. You know, it might, I don't know. Paul might just get up there and just do a promo promoting the next night's Mania. He might just be doing a promo putting over the Bloodline. I wouldn't put it past him that his Hall of Fame speech is completely kayfabe.
I think we can expect all of that. It's Paul Heyman. You just never know, right? It's Paul. It's just, I know there's going to be some tears because the fans won't let him speak initially because there'll be a standing ovation. There'll be a roar. It's the people in Philadelphia and people that love Paul Heyman and know the crap that he's gone through when he was in WWE. That's also like hired and fired. You know, there was a time, I'll tell you this quick story about just, you recall as a younger wrestling fan, Justin, when Paul Heyman was running SmackDown and it was kind of like Stephanie versus Paul, I think. It wasn't Stephanie running Raw and he was writing SmackDown, and SmackDown was the better product at some point because he was bringing out young guys and it was just a kind of a different feel until they got, I was like, okay, Paul, that's enough, because Paul was, I guess he was too much for Vince and for Stephanie. So Paul was removed from that post. But there was a time where you saw Paul running SmackDown. It's like, boy, there's something gritty and different and young and fast about this particular show versus Raw. And so I always appreciate that as well. Like, that guy's got a great mind for the business.
Yeah, I'll never forget, again, real quick memory. I was in Washington, D.C. for Monday Night Raw, mm-hmm. March. So it was this month, March of 2001. We're on the road to WrestleMania 17. And obviously the internet and social media is not what it was today. And I'm there in the crowd with my buddy. And they introduce Jim Ross. Here comes good old JR. And I'm waiting for Jerry the King Lawler's music to hit. But no, they announced the newest commentator on Monday Night Raw. And here comes Paul Heyman. Because I had no idea that Jerry Lawler had just walked out because of his Stacy the Cat Carter and all that stuff. I had no idea. Paul comes out, you know, his swagger and his leather jacket, and he's got his credential that he wears and all. I mean, and the place just went nuts.
Yes.
It was like, oh my, you know, because again, remember, this is March of 01. All we've known is Paul and ECW. We have, you know, it's like, what is going on? Mm-hmm. And I was so mad. I was excited to pop with the rest of the fans. But I was so mad that I was like, I can't hear commentary. You know, and again, it's not like I had DVR or anything. And so I was so mad that I wanted to hear Paul Heyman on commentary. And what is he saying? Because I knew that whatever Paul's on a microphone, it was must hear.
I you know, and it was, by the way, because he got under Jim Ross's skin.
It was great. Like, the way he would stare at him and just make fun of him.
It's like he got legit got out of Jim Ross's skin. And that made for a really interesting pair between those two. They had worked together, I think, in the NWA as well at one point. But that was a younger Heyman and a younger Ross. But like a grizzled veteran like Jim Ross is locked into the broadcast. And Paul Heyman just kept needling JR. And they kept going back and forth. And it made for a fun broadcast. I think JR could admit to that as well. So then the big scuttlebutt this week on Busted Open is who's going to put Paul into the Hall of Fame. I think because it's Triple H's, so to speak, Hall of Fame, I think it's wide open, because it kind of go back to like when Jerry Lawler went into the Hall of Fame. Like, well, who should induct him? Well, it should be like Lance Russell. Like, it should somebody from Memphis Wrestling. Nope, William Shatner. Because that made more sense to Vince because of the star power. Like, everyone knows Bill, everyone knows William Shatner. Who knows Lance Russell? You know, who knows Dave Brown? So that's why that didn't happen. But I think that in this iteration of the Hall of Fame, run by a Triple H, I think it's wide open. It could be anybody.
I think I agree with that. There's far more potential possibilities. Obviously, our Busted Open colleagues, a Bully or Tommy, would make a lot of sense given their history with Philly, with Paul, with ECW. But Again, it's a TV show. It's an attraction. You build the Hall of Fame somewhat like you do in a card, and I think you're going to go for the biggest marquee name. And so for me, I think there's three in that class in terms of who's the three biggest marquee names that not just in Philly but globally that also have tied to Paul. And to me, that's Stone Cold, mm-hmm. that's Steve with his younger part of his career with his connection to Paul, CM Punk for obvious reasons, and again, it gets Punk involved in Mania Weekend. Or the tribal chief, Roman Reigns, if we're talking about the here and now.
Roman Reigns, could you imagine him coming out there? Wow, throwing the ones up. Everyone will be all about Roman Reigns, that's for sure. And then putting Paul in, that'd be something. I'm going to go CM Punk in that spot because there's no spot for CM Punk. He's not wrestling. Yeah. So, and people really love CM Punk. Punk had the spirit of ECW, even though he didn't wrestle there. So I think that works out perfectly.
What are you talking about? He wrestled on the ECWs on Tuesdays on Sci-Fi.
I don't want to hear about Sci-Fi.
Oh, don't deny me the ECW on Sci-Fi.
Was that his matchup against the Zombie?
His first match on TV for Stanford was on Sci-Fi.
I don't want to hear about Sci-Fi. Well, actually, that is true. WWECW. That's what it was, right? Yes. Yeah, on Sci-Fi.
It gave us Kelly.
It did. It did. Gave us a zombie, too, in the first match. That was the first ever match of that company.
Gave us Big Show as world champion.
Gave us Vince as world champion.
In a do-rag.
There's something wrong there. There's something wrong there. Him coming to the ringside, walking like George Jefferson. I had no understanding what he was trying to do there. I don't know what he's trying to do, but that wasn't great. That was not a great look. Boy, you talk about trying to just throw it away. My God.
I agree with Punk as well. For again, he doesn't have a spot, and for nothing else, if you never know, Austin could appear in night one or night two, whether it's for a promo with other legends, whether it's to get involved physically somewhere. So I feel like if that was going to happen, don't let us see or advertise Austin for anything else that weekend. Let that be, let it keep it as a surprise. If he's advertised for Hall of Fame, it's like, all right, now we know he's there. I think it dampens a potential surprise.
Yo, what's going on? This is Bully Ray from Busted Open on SiriusXM's Fight Nation. For 15 years, we've brought you the best pro wrestling talk on the planet. And now, we're bringing you even more. Yo, guys, welcome to Busted Open After Dark. Every Wednesday night, as soon as AEW Dynamite ends, I'm bringing you instant reactions with the Busted Open Nation. The only place to party on Wednesday nights is Busted Open After Dark. With me, Uncle Bully. Download it on Apple, Pandora, or wherever you get your podcast.
Justin Labar, buddy, you are first. What is the match of the week?
I am entering the ring from TNA Sacrifice, Nick Nemeth versus Steve Macklin. I love this match. Now, I missed a few minutes of it. A few transmission issues. Mm-hmm. A few satellites bounced off the wrong places. But I still saw enough of it to know that this is match of the week material. Go and watch it if you haven't seen it. Nice slow build. They start off collar and elbow tie up, some headlocks, starting off slow, feeling each other out, and then this thing really builds, but it builds. They're selling. It was compelling. I don't always say this, but I found myself in the match, Jonathan, going, I don't want to see this one end. I want to see how they keep going. That's not an always thing for me. And Macklin with the spot of he goes to dive and hit Nick, and he dives right through the ropes and just shakes himself into the timekeeper's area. What a spot. What a spot. Nemeth versus Macklin.
And you can watch that on Triller TV, the old Fight TV. Just go to Triller TV, and the replay is available right now. TrillerTV.com. All right. Let me throw out a card. Same show, TNA Sacrifice on Friday from Windsor, Ontario. Josh Alexander against Alexander Hammerstone. Mm-hmm. Boy, that was the best match on the card for me. And of course, it's Josh Alexander. Of course, it was the best match on the card. Alexander Hammerstone. Hammerstone is now part of TNA, which I think is awesome. Loved him as MLW champion and was a great free agent pickup, I thought, for TNA. I just think that the back and forth between these two, just the struggle between the two was fantastic. Alexander is always going to give you a banger, but then Alexander Hammerstone has gotten so much better over the years. I thought that was a fantastic match. And again, if you have not seen TNA Sacrifice, I thought it was a B-plus card. if nothing else, which is fine for what they're where they're going, because they're telling stories there. Another solid show for TNA Sacrifice, Alexander against Hammerstone. Judge Susumu, what was the Busted Open match of the week between these two?
Got to give it to Macklin and Nick Nemeth, mostly on the grounds that... Here's my question for you, Jonathan. Did you feel that this match between Josh Alexander and Hammerstone, was it better than their previous match at Hard to Kill?
That's a hell of a question. Ah,
look, it's a Susumu's supposed to be a judge. He's out here hard hitting journalism,
It's a hell of a question. No, Susumu. Actually, I'm not saying that this was bad. What I'm saying is, I like the Hard to Kill a little bit better than this one, but I really enjoyed this one just the same.
Yeah, that's the only thing that's like hanging me over on picking Hammerstone Alexander was that they definitely did much better in their first match, to me anyway. But with this current run with Nick Nemeth and Steve Macklin, that match, like, this is really feels like Nick Nemeth has really rejuvenated himself. He feels alive in the ring right now, and I'm seeing it both in TNA and in New Japan for his work as the current IWGP Global Heavyweight Champion as well. So really nice time to be a Nick Nemeth fan.
All right, so we eliminate Alexander and Hammerstone. All right, two more matches, snake draft. I'm going with Ospreay against Fletcher for Busted Open match of the week. So here's what we've got so far. Here we go, Justin. We got Will Ospreay against Michael Oko for the British Heavyweight Championship. We got Ospreay against Takeshita, and we got Ospreay against Fletcher. I don't know. All great matches, and we're not even in April yet. So, to me, the best match on Dynamite was Ospreay against Fletcher. I nominate that for Match of the Week. Justin LaBar.
All right, well, I'm going to counter you with a completely different type of match. I'm going to counter you from NXT Roadblock of the Asylum match of Dijak versus Joe Gacy. This was just bowling shoe ugly fun to watch these two go at it. And I don't know. There was something about, there's a story, if you're following the storyline between these two, you know, that the intimate $1 million TV studio setting that you have, studio wrestling kind of setting you have there with NXT at the Performance Center, you know, the hardcore spots. And just also, I've been a fan of Dijak's career. I've watched him. We certainly all suffered with him through Retribution and some of that nonsense. So when I see him doing a moonsault off the cage and just laying it all out there, it's because tomorrow ain't guaranteed in the wrestling business. Your booking ain't guaranteed tomorrow. So I felt this. I felt for both guys. I really enjoyed it. Match of the Week nominee for sure.
Judge Susumu, out of those two matches, which is the Busted Open match of the week?
Hands down, Ospreay Fletcher. Because not only did we get the usual with Will Ospreay, but it really felt like it elevated Kyle Fletcher right now, who's kind of like, I would say that it, amongst everybody in the Don Callis family, he's the one that gets slept on the most. And really, this was for, like, I love this match because I know the history between Will Ospreay and Kyle Fletcher, their days in New Japan with the United Kingdom, and they've been training with each other for years. So I knew that this was going to be awesome. I just didn't expect them to really blow the roof off the arena right there. I didn't expect it. I really didn't. And those guys really stepped up and made that Dynamite special, super special in Atlanta.
Nemeth against Macklin, Ospreay against Fletcher, Judge Susumu, what is the Busted Open match of the week?
Will Ospreay versus Kyle Fletcher on AEW Dynamite for emanating from Atlanta, Georgia. That is the Busted Open match of the week.
There it is. Ospreay, Fletcher. Banger after banger after banger from Ospreay.
Busted Open is part of the SiriusXM Sports Podcast Network. If you enjoyed this episode and want to hear more, please give a 5-star rating and leave a review. Subscribe today wherever you stream your podcast. Catch the full 3 hours of Busted Open every day of the week at 9 a.m. Eastern on SiriusXM Foundation, channel 156. Go to SiriusXM.com/BustedOpenTrial to start your free trial today.